All right. I know one thing about the eyesight stuff. If I don't wear my glasses at home, I don't get to see the honey-do list. She's not. Oh, she just came in. Zip it. Okay. Yep. I think there's a theme going so far today. But anyway, I'm going to break the theme up just a little bit. This is your land, part two. Last time we talked about the lowest place in Israel. Today we're going to talk about the highest place in Israel. Anybody know where that might be? Yes. Har Harmon. Okay. Speaking of glasses. Yeah, the one with the mustache and the nose. Now, the thing about this is I can see this very well, but when I look out, I don't know who's sleeping and who's not, so. All right. Start out with a scripture. When Yah, your Elohim, has brought you into the land he swore to your ancestors, Abraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, that he would give you cities great and prosperous, which you didn't build, houses full of all sorts of good things, which you didn't fill, water cisterns dug out, which you didn't dig, vineyards and olive trees, which you didn't plant, and you have eaten your fill. Then be careful not to forget Yahweh, who brought you out of the land of Egypt where you lived as slaves. That's where we're going, folks. That's the promise. So today we're going to take our little field trip to Mount Hermon. It's the northernmost point in contemporary Israel. Northernmost. Its peak is 9,232 feet above sea level. So that's like 1 3/4 miles high. Last time we talked about the deepest place being a half a mile below sea level. So we got quite a contrast between 1 3/4 miles, half a mile below sea level. Do the math. Because I didn't. All right. So some other names for Mount Hermon is the Gray-Haired Mountain or the Mountain of Snow. But it's also called the Eyes of Israel. That's because from its vantage point, you can see very far in a lot of different directions, especially into Syria. It's Israel's primary strategic early warning area. So Mount Hermon has seasonal snow, which covers all three of its peaks. So it's not just one peak, but there's three peaks that are in this little range. And so that snow is up there deep into the springtime. So it starts snowing in the wintertime when that's when they get all their precipitation. And so anyway, the meltwater from this mountain, it seeps down the mountains slopes, especially on the western and the southern slopes, and it goes into the rock channels and the pores of the mountain, and it feeds springs at the base of the mountain, and from here we get the headwaters of the Jordan River. So these merge. Oh, I already said that. Okay. Oh, now additionally, the runoff facilitates a lot of plant life, where there's vineyards, where there's pine, there's oak, there's poplar trees. So the springs and the mountain itself, you can just imagine how contested that was. Before 1973, Syria owned that or controlled that up there. So whoever controls it is pretty much expected to be responsible enough to guard against the pollution of this area and deforestation. So before 1973, Syria was engaged in a huge canal building project to funnel or redirect the water from Mount Hermon to Syria. Guess what that would have done to Israel? It would have dried up the Jordan River, would have dried up the Galilee. It was a threat to Israel's vital water sources. So Mount Hermon is also important because of its strategic advantage. So during the Yom Kippur War, that's when Israel reestablished control of that area, of course, from the hands of the Syrians. So on that point, there's some places where we are not allowed to go because it's home to some of the most sophisticated technology and radar tracking systems that the IDF has. So anyway, that's another look at your home. All right. Now to the lesson. The lesson is going to be on something that you might think is very, very fundamental, and it really is. It's sort of like a seed when it's first conceived. It's so small in the scheme of everything. And we sang about it. It's just unreal. Another day where Yahweh orchestrated this whole thing. He had the choreography already planned. So, but anyway, let's get into our little time machine in our minds and go back to the sixth day, the beginning of Adam. Elohim, he's made everything up to this point. Now he's going to work on man. So Elohim has called forth every animal of the air, the land, and the sea into being. He's named all the places. He's named and placed all the luminaries in the skies and the heavens for the day and for the night. So the great loving one has sent out now. He sent out, imagine this, invitations to all of his creation, which reads something like this. Come and come and witness this union. And it would read something like this. Let us make man in our image, in the likeness of ourselves, and let them rule over the fish of the sea, the birds of the air, the animals, and over all the earth, and over every crawling creature that crawls on the earth. In other words, it was like, come to this meeting, come to this event, and meet your ruler. And he called, which is Vayikra, all his creation to assemble before this great stage that he had built. By the way, he built it without human hands. Everything and everyone is seated in their reserved seats. So just imagine this gathering. The holy ones, including, yes, the worship leader, Lucifer, they're carefully arrayed so that every participant can hear the angelic praises and see what is happening before their very eyes. The heavenly hosts are looking forth from their vantage points. And there are no bad or cheap seats in this place. Everything and everyone is holding their breath in exuberant anticipation for the next act from the Almighty. His wisdom has been, to this point, incomprehensible. The Holy One, The Ancient of Days steps up onto the stage. He looks around and smiles at the entire congregation. He extends his arms as if he were blessing the entire audience. The silence is deafening. Suddenly, a gentle, balmy breeze begins to blow as the living one inhales. He breathes into the lifeless masterpiece of clay that's lying lifeless on the floor of the stage. As the Holy One breathes, as the holy breath enters the clay, the chest rises, and Adam opens his eyes. And if we were going to stop right here, this would just sound like spiritual CPR. But it's not. This was not just life, but life abundant. Yahweh's Spirit immediately causes Adam's ears to hear him. You know what? That was the original purpose of Adam's hearing. Adam's eyes were immediately able to see his Abba and what he was doing. That was the original function of Adam's eyes. We've heard that more than once today. Adam was he was immediately able to understand and speak a language so that he could communicate with El Elyon. That was the original intention of Adam's tongue. Adam's inmost being was overflowing with his father's essence. The room in Adam's heart was designed to house the Holy One. Adam was able to stand upright on his feet and walk. Adam's original position was to walk side by side with his friend. Adam reached out his hand to the hand of the heavenly bridegroom. Adam's hand was originally designed to cling to the Holy One for love's sake. So, can you imagine the delight in the Holy One's face when Adam spoke his first word in admiration to the King of Kings? Can you imagine the entire universe could not contain themselves any further? The praises, the trembling, the roar of the waves, the thundering of the heavens, all in chorus that a child of Elohim has been revealed to all creation. And David said, "What is man that you, O King, should be so mindful of him?" So there was running and leaping and praising to Yahweh as the congregation finally dispersed to return to their places in the creation in preparation for the first Shabbat. But all was not well in paradise. Just ask Lucifer. In his view, there was way too much pomp and grandeur placed on this insignificant, or the seemingly insignificant person. So, the world since then. We know the rest of the chapter of this, of the history of the world since then. The children of Elohim fell to become human flesh. And we lost our faculties. Isaiah 6:10. Make the hearts of this people insensitive, or in other words, fat. Their ears dull, or in Hebrew, heavy. and their eyes blind, in Hebrew, sealed over, so that they will not see with their eyes, hear with their ears, understand with their hearts, and return and be healed. That's the shape mankind is in. That's, to a point, to a degree, we're still in. Here's what it seems like the world has been going through. Perfection is displayed for a moment, but gives way to corruption and decay. Paradise, revealed for a short time, then lost. Man and women were created as one and then separated. Yahweh reveals himself in power and glory for a time, then he becomes invisible. Yahweh speaks and then he's silent. The temples were built and stood for a short time, then destroyed. It seems like we have been on a merry-go-round for thousands of years. Why? Why does it seem mankind is privileged to only get a glimpse or a tidbit of the Almighty, and then it's gone? Well, that's what we're here to talk about. Let's talk about the shape that most of the world is in. And it's not just now, but it's been this way. It's called religion, or in our case, diluted Christianity. So what's the typical philosophy of Christianity? We've all been there. Basically, and I'm making it very short, you say the prayer and then you wait. You wait for the rapture. You wait. Jesus did everything, and all we need to do is just sit, eat, drink, and wait until we are raptured or die, whichever comes first. So, let me ask some other questions. And you can ask this to the whole of Christianity. Do you want the kingdom to come? And everybody said, yeah, we want the kingdom to come. Do you want to hear his voice and see his glory? Oh, yeah, we want to do that, especially every Sunday or every Saturday. So, here's the question. They say an answer. Oh, yeah. But can we tell their answers, or do their answers conflict with their actions? If you want the kingdom to come, what kind of training are you in right now for that? What are you training for? So let's continue with some more questions. Do you know your destiny? Do you know your purpose? Many, they'll say, well, my destiny is to be with Jesus. Okay, that's good. I didn't say it's great, but that's, you know, a start. But fewer still will not know their purpose in life. So why does one not know their purpose in life? Could it be that even though they don't know their purpose in life, it's still not important enough to pursue what that purpose is? Let's bring this down to some things we can understand. On many team sports, there's different positions. Basketball, baseball, football, there's different positions. And each position has its unique skill set, both physically and mentally. They must all work together at their positions to achieve victory. If you know your purpose, you have submitted to the training of what that position and its responsibilities require. And sometimes we start out good and then we forget. So I'm going to remind you, we are in a training period. It has requirements and it has responsibilities. Now, if anybody has played sports, they know that at the end of the game, when you're going into the locker room, it was always kind of a shame to go in with a very clean and spotless uniform. You know what that means. You rode the pine. It means you weren't in the game. I can assure you that the apostles and the prophets did not arrive at their destinies with spotless apparel. Instead, they showed up at their destiny ragged and wounded, but victorious. To them, Yeshua will cleanse, heal, and give them new garments. In the military, a goal and the pledge is sworn by all to defend our Constitution and our country. Everyone, without exception, must first undergo basic training. If you're in the military, that's where you have to go first. What's basic training? Well, among a lot of other things, one of the things basic training does, it's to separate the soldiers from civilian life and lifestyles to the military life. It's to set them aside. The people then, after they go through basic training, then they go to other training for specialized tasks. And they are trained in those specialties. When you're in the military, you just don't look at a box, pick up a uniform, put it on. No, you earn it. You earn your uniform. You don't just pick up a gun and then think you're Rambo and tell everybody, I'm coming, ready or not. That's not how it goes. Not before specialty training. A person living in their purpose are not only trained in their specialty, but they're also placed and positioned in their proper place in the whole scheme of things. Am I kind of making some sense about what we are expected to undergo? A lot of times, we are guilty of, well, I want to do this. Now we're going to find out, is that good or not? Let's just say the condition of Christianity as a whole right now, they do not submit to the basic training. The basic training is Torah. They don't submit to authority and structure. And they don't know much about supporting others. Did you know that for a specialty frontline person, that it takes almost 20 people to support them? The doctors, the cooks, all these other people to help support them logistically. 20 other people to help support that one. Nor do they know much about Yeshua's leadership chain or the chain of command. And by the way, we read about some of these specialties. Some are given as prophets, apostles, teachers. You know, those gifts are rooted in the Torah. They just didn't spring up out of nowhere. Their roots are in the Torah. So let's back up a little bit. Up to now, our discussion's been talking about missions and duty and destiny. All right, that's great. But how does one get in the right direction to get to that place? Where do you got to start? So let's just put this whole picture in reverse. Let's stop the bus and put it in reverse. A person living in their purpose was specialty trained for the duty. They are also positioned, preceding the specialty training was a humble person who acknowledged the Holy One's call. And they said, Hineni, here I am. But is there something before Hineni? There sure is. There was a call from the Almighty. It was a God encounter. It was a burning bush, maybe. Maybe it was like Solomon, who prayed to the Lord. And as Solomon was sitting on the throne, he had a God encounter. You look in Scripture, and it seems like all the great people of the covenant responded to a God encounter. And either it was from the womb, the fish's belly, maybe they were in the wilderness during their God encounter, or like Solomon on the throne. So many times and many ways, Yahweh encountered men and women. Did that end? No. Each and every one of us have had some kind of encounter. But there are a few that just decide, well, you know what? I'm going to just check this out and see what it's like. If I like it, I'll follow it. If I don't, I'm not. But to be here and to be serious, we each and every one had a unique encounter with the Holy One. So, now, we see how important a God encounter is. A God encounter will set your path. If you didn't know your purpose, that God encounter will help you get on that path to your purpose. So, again, is there any prerequisite for that God encounter? Although Yahweh is everywhere, here's a little secret. He seems to reveal himself in places that have made room for him. So how do you make room for him? It seems that the kingdom, the spiritual kingdom growth, and existence hang on this one thing, and that's yearning. Yearning. Yeshua said, he didn't say yearning, but here's what he did say. So I say to you, ask, and it will be given to you. Seek, and you will find. Knock, and it will be opened to you. For everyone who asks receives, the one who seeks finds, and to the one who knocks it will be opened. That's all in red letters. How can one seek, ask, or knock if there is not first a yearning? And the persistence that goes with that. So this is how one makes room for the Almighty, and then does not give up. You know what? Isn't this yearning more like a description of relationship? If I go right back to that first day, that sixth day, when Adam opened his eyes, wasn't that all about relationship? Is that what we yearn for? Is that something that we yearn for more than the gifts or the power or to see miracles? You know, Paul did many miracles. The disciples did many miracles. But Lazarus, he knew what Yeshua's favorite meal was. Anytime he was in the area, he went to that house. Isn't that great? There's guys that knew the Bible, that had memorized almost all the Torah. But here's Lazarus. He goes to his house whenever he could, far more than the other people. I told you this is going to be something that's so minute, but it's like a mustard seed. So, this is a description of relationship. It's like in the garden. This is where we're heading. This is where Torah leads us to. Torah is not the end of the road. It's the helper that helps us get to where we're supposed to go. It doesn't depend on race, gender, or nationality, or DNA. That's the neat thing about this. And for more insight on this, read Romans 10 for Shaul's commentary on this very thing. Now, sometimes Yeshua, in his mercy, he needs to awaken the yearning in us. Sometimes we just give up. Now, somebody's going to say, oh, where's the proof of that? Well, remember this phrase when Yeshua goes to the pool of Siloam? Do you want to be healed? He had to almost remind him why he was there. He was there for so long. What do you want? I want somebody to help me in. Do you want to be healed? He had to wake up the yearning in the person that he once had. Maybe we need to have some yearning woke up in us. I know I do. So let's go back to this one question. It says, why does it seem mankind is privileged only to get little glimpses, little tidbits of the Almighty and His glory? All right, before we get into that, there is a caveat. The Hebrew idea of yearning. This is a big point. Yearning. It's activity or desire in a direction. In a direction. Yearning, a lot of times, like love or desire in the Western mindset, can be kind of abstract. Not in Hebrew. The yearning is an action in a direction. So let's review some examples. Remember I said our eyes have been sealed over, right? Do you yearn to see the Father that is everywhere, but He's hidden? Our ears have been plugged. Do you yearn to hear the Father who is always speaking, but is silent? Do you yearn for the decay and corruption that you see to be restored to perfection? Do you long to find paradise again? Do you yearn for the invisible Elohim to show His glory to the nations and for justice? Do you yearn to walk by His side daily? Do you yearn for his return? Do you yearn for the fullness of the cut of his covenant? All these little morsels, they're from the loving one. They're road signs to guide our efforts in the right direction. What are you yearning for? A lot of times, well, I don't know what I'm yearning for. But he's saying, from history, do you yearn for the temple? The place where I, the Holy One, was present all the time? You know what? Yeshua fulfilled all these things. He didn't do anything unless he saw the Father doing it. He would hear what the Father had to say to him in the mornings. So is it impossible for us to get our direction back to the garden? Is it possible or impossible? Well, guess what? It wasn't impossible to Yeshua. It wasn't impossible to those that he trained and sent out. The disciples gave their life as they witnessed to us that it is possible. And we are not alone on this journey. Romans 8:22-25. For we know the whole creation groans and suffers the pains of childbirth together until now. And not only that, but also we ourselves, having the first fruits of the Spirit, even we ourselves groan within ourselves. It's just like creation saw what happened in the garden, saw that first day of Adam, and they lost it too. Paradise was lost to all of creation. They groan for that. You know what? Groaning, that's yearning. Even creation is yearning for the revealing of the sons of God. So we ourselves are waiting eagerly for our adoption as sons and daughters, the redemption of our body. For in hope we have been saved, but hope that is seen is not hope. For who hopes for what is already seen? But if we hope for what we do not see, through perseverance we wait eagerly for it. Isn't that like another definition of yearning? Paul. So, if HaSatan kills or redirects our yearning for Abba, the battle is over. He starts at the very beginning with yearning. If he can kill that or redirect it in the wrong direction, that battle is over. But we are not yearning alone, family. How much do you yearn for all these things to be restored? A lot? A little? Well, let's just say it's a lot, okay? Guess what? Abba is yearning all the more as the great day approaches. So let us join him and yearn together. Sadly, there are those who have had their yearning redirected or killed. They do not set their heart on things above. Remember that yearning, the persistent asking, seeking, and knocking is required on our parts to make room for the great I am. If a person, if you or me, is not yearning for Elohim's relationship on his terms, we're wasting our time. If you're talking to somebody else that has no yearning, you're wasting your time. But just continue to sow the seeds. That's our job. Don't try to convince somebody if they don't have that yearning. Otherwise, it just ends up being some kind of mental or emotional ascent. So why are their eyes and their ears closed to the message? Simply because they lack the yearning in the direction set forth. This yearning has nothing to do with our own merits. It's not about how pious anybody can be. What opens the door for an Elohim encounter is the passion to know Him. That's it. The passion to be intimate with Him. That's how it all starts. That's how it all begins. I'll say a blessing, and then I'm going to ask another question. Blessed are you, Holy One, who is enthroned in the heavens. All things have been made by you, through you, and to you. Your grace is sufficient for us. Thank you for your mighty works of redemption and your salvation. Thank you that you lead the weary pilgrims back home to you. Only you can restore and give life. Great is your faithfulness. Now I'm going to ask you, how strong is your yearning? Don't try to fool me. This is to the Almighty. How strong is your yearning? Do you even have any yearning? Or did you lose your yearning somewhere along the way? Do you feel like you're not going anywhere in your spiritual walk? Well, let's just say, yeah, I'm yearning. I'm doing everything you said. All right? But do you have corresponding actions to back up what you're saying, what you're declaring? It's heavy, folks. This little bitty thing, yearning, can be the difference for where you end up. Hallelujah. Okay. Let's see here. I got something. Or maybe I don't have something. I want to make sure. Nope, I don't have anything more. All right. Anything else from anybody else? Comment. I'll take these off so I can see y'all. Okay, so I don't see anybody sleeping, so. Tells us how to pray. We can't convince them. Thank you. And that's a big thing. Hey, did somebody else want to say anything? Oh. Well, you're welcome, of course. Guess who the first person to preach that to was? Me. I preached to myself on that one. Okay. Scott, yes.
This is really huge, and it's nothing tiny. I think maybe, it's kind of a paradox. It seems small, but it's really huge.
Correct, right? Yeah.
And the fact that, we look for that journey when we're sharing with people, just in conversation all the time. Co-workers, friends, people, wherever you encounter a conversation. That's what I'm looking for. too. Because I don't want to spill all the stuff that might be really good stuff, but it's not going to have any effect at all. Right? You've really got to discern that level. Another thing is that I was told by a church I was a part of 30-some years ago that this whole idea of the analogy of the body of Messiah as an army was not true. They didn't endorse that, they didn't recommend it, they avoided it, they just said, nah, that's not true. And I've always seen that now. This kind of a voluntary type army where there is a command structure, there is training. And there's all these specialties that you mentioned, I think we should go further with this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think we should maybe have some kind of a follow-up conversation, just, you know, what are you suggesting in these lines of training? We submit our lives to being trained at our jobs, at our professions, our crafts, whatever we usually do for a living, or even in our hobbies. We go to special classes to learn all about hobbies and stuff, woodworking, you know, whatever it is, artwork. And yet we just don't see, you know, the opportunities maybe for training sometimes, you know, at this, at what we're doing here. Or maybe we may not see it that way. We just may see it as something that's sort of amorphous and just grows and doesn't have, you know, certain skills or training in a skill. And yet, from my training in Navigators, that was like my first exposure to what training really is. As far as discipleship, Bible study, dance, all those things. And of course, there's a lot more now. We understand what the gifts are. But I would suggest that discipleship is probably one thing where you find the training ground.
Mm-hmm. Well, remember, I don't know how much. We had a discipleship series, and it's almost like, okay, we thought we knew what we were going to teach on, and now it's almost like we got to go back and rewrite the whole thing, because the Father just keeps revealing more and more things.
Yeah.
And why does He do that? Why does He reveal things more and more as you go along, and doesn't just dump it on you right off the bat? But the thing is where I'm at right now, where you're at right now. A year from now, when we're here, we're going to be sitting in different seats. We're going to have a different understanding. There's going to be so much that changes in our lives, and the Father is going to be directing these if we humble ourselves to that. And so it's kind of funny. There's some of us that can kind of chuckle when we see younger people that think they've arrived. And when I'm younger in the faith. And so some of these little ones, they probably have a better chance of grasping things than we do. And so we may have to start humbling ourselves to learn from, you know, lessons from some of them too. So.
We have conversation about a lot of different subjects and so forth, but we don't go that extra distance sometimes to say, I want to submit to being trained by you or in a particular area. Don't make that extra step.
Mm-hmm.
And so we don't have, we sort of, you know, walk away and wait for the next conversation. You have to go out of your way to want to be trained.
Yes. Moses had to go out of his way, yeah, off the road to the burning bush for that God encounter.
He had to look twice, too. The first time, it's like, oh, you know, I'm not used to seeing something like that. He looked away, and then he had to look back and say, what is causing this?
So yeah.
He did the double thing. We have to look at all the opportunities that may be there, and we just avoid them.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Well, a lot can be said. It's like you said, or alluded to, but the yearning is like that little sprout that is going to just branch into a mini branch tree. So, anyway, we got a lot ahead of us. Okay. Well, I have. Oh, let me bless you with the Aaronic blessing, and then Tom's got. He sent me some announcements. All right. First of all, accept his name upon you. Yivarekaka Yahweh Yavishmereka. Ya'er Yahweh Panavaleka Vichuneka. Yisa Yahweh Panavaleka Vayasem Lecha Shalom. May Yah bless you and keep you. May Yah make his face shine on you and show you his favor. May Yah lift up his face toward you and give you shalom. Amen. Amen.